Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Channa Balabha Giravaradhari. Gopi Channa Balabha Giravaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parvrajakacharya Sotera Sri Sri Shimnisvayan Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parvrajakacharya Sotera Sri Sri Shimnisvayan Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glories to assembled devotees All glories to assembled devotees All glories to assembled devotees Glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60, Krishna teases Rukmini. We're doing text 32 through 34 today. Okay. Let's see. I think we're missing the Sri Shukla Vach on the top of this one. There we go. So I guess we'll do text 32. Sri Shukla Vacha. Saivam Bhagavata Rajan Vaidarbhi Parasantvita Yatva Tat Parihasoktim Priyatyaga Bhayam Jahau Sri Shukuvacha Saivam Bhagavata Rajan Vaidarbhi Parasantvita Yatva Tat Parihasoktim Priyatyaga Bhayam Jahau Sri Shukuvacha Saivam Bhagavata Rajan Vaidarbhi Parasantvita Yatva tat parihasoktim Priyatyaga bhayam jahau Shri Shukla Vacha Ladies. Sri Shukavacha, Shukadeva Goswami said, Sa, she, Evam, thus, Bhagavata, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rajan, O King, by Darby, Queen Rukmini, Parisantvita, fully pacified. Yatva, understanding. Tut, his. Parihasa, spoken in jest. Uptim, words. Priya, by her beloved. Tyaga, of rejection. Bhayam, her fear. Jahau, gave up. Translation? And purports by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, Queen Vidarbhi was fully pacified by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understood that his words had been spoken in jest. Thus she gave up her fear that her beloved would reject her. Okay, can we read text 33 together? Babasa rishabham pungsam vikshanti bhagavan mukham Savritahasaruchira snigda paginavarta. Smiling bashfully as she cast charming, affectionate glances upon the face of the Lord, the best of the males, Rukmini spoke the following, O descendant of Bharata. This next one, I think, is the Brahma Samhita tune. You can help me out here. Sri Rukmini Uvacha Nandita. Ravinda Vilochanaha Yadvai Bhavan Bhagavato Sadrishi Vibhuma Vasve Mahim Yavirito Bhagavams Tradesha Kvaham Guna Prakriti Agya Prihita Pada. Thank you. Translation. Sri Rukmini said, actually, what you have said is true, O lotus-eyed one. I am indeed unsuitable for the Almighty Personality of Godhead. What comparison is there between that Supreme Lord who is the master of the three primal deities and who delights in his own glory, and myself, a woman of mundane qualities whose feet are grasped by fools? Report. Srila Sridhar Swami lists the faults Lord Krishna has described in himself that he claimed disqualified him from being Rukmini's husband. These include incompatibility, fearfulness, taking shelter in the ocean, quarreling with the powerful, abandoning his kingdom, uncertainty as to his identity, acting against ordinary standards of behavior, having no good qualities, being praised falsely by beggars, aloofness, and lack of desire for family life. Quite a list. The Lord claimed that Rukmini had failed to recognize these bad qualities in him. Now she begins to respond to all of the Lord's statements. First, she responds to Sri Krishna's statement, text 11 of this chapter, Kasmanova Vrishe Saman. Why did you select us who are not equal to you? Here, Srimati Rukmini Devi says that she and Krishna are certainly not equal, for no one can be equal to the Supreme Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further points out that in her extreme humility, Rukmini is identifying herself with the Lord's external energy, which is in fact her expansion, Rukmini being the goddess of fortune. Om Jnanatam Randvishan Gananjana Salakaya Chakshun Mutami Nirvasmai Sri Gurubhai Namaha Vanchakalpa Turivishcha Turibhisindu Devacha Patitano Bhavani Guru Vaishnava Namaha Namaha. It's a little overview of the chapter here. First, there's the introduction to the chapter, and then there's 11 verses, Vishnu Shavai Thakur points out, verses 10 through 21, where Krishna describes his disqualification as a husband. And we just heard the list given by Sridhar Swami in his purport and commentaries of all of these different qualities that Krishna says, these are his bad qualities and why Rukmini should never have accepted him as a husband and should reject him now. Of course, then, after that, Rukmini gets very upset. She's afraid that Krishna might actually leave her, and this just puts her in total anxiety, realizing that maybe that Krishna had realized he had overdone it a bit, maybe, and seeing how distressed Rukmini was, which wasn't his intention. His intention was really just to have teasing interactions with her. He assures her that he is only teasing, and then she's pacified and feels much better. So after that, now the next 12 verses, Rukmini is going to go through those points one by one and refute them. And what she does is she very cleverly shows that all of his statements that he made of all of these different qualities in these previous 11 verses actually glorify Krishna. So she turns the words around as words of self-condemnation to words of glorification. So it's really, I wish I knew Sanskrit because it's so interesting and clever the way that these things are done and how words can have different meanings and how you interpret them one way shows one thing and you interpret another way has a totally different meaning. And there are many places in the Bhagavatam you see this. Sometimes in some of the interactions with the gopis and other places we get these dual meanings of so many statements that are there. And it's particularly in these kind of teasing and joking moments between Krishna and his queens or Krishna and the gopis that we see this exhibited. So here we're looking at the first one. The first statement that Krishna makes, he says, Kasmin Navarvishe Saman. He says, why did you select us who are not equal to you? So he was trying to, of course, saying, I was from a coward boy, a family. I was a simple village boy. You were a great queen. I was not equal to you. And, of course, now Rukmini responds, yes, it's true. We are not equal because no one is the equal. Krishna is not equal to anyone. Nobody can possibly be the equal of Krishna because Krishna is superior to all. So the first thing that Rukmini establishes is Krishna's superiority. And she actually does this. There's three different, words or statements that sort of shows this. First of all, she says Krishna is Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord. So if you say someone is Bhagavan right away, you're saying you are superior, a supreme personality, a supreme supreme being. Then she says that Krishna is Tradish. They announced somebody whose name Tradish was here? Okay. So this word Tradish means controller of the three primal deities. The tri is Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. Isha, obviously the controller. So the controller of the three primal deities, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, Rukmini is saying this, calling Krishna Tradish, that he has this qualification. Because, of course, many people assume that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are equal, or that Krishna is simply an expansion of Vishnu. This is a common misconception that there are so many different Leela avatars of Vishnu, and that Krishna was simply one of these. So in other words, reversing the position. And here she's saying, no, you are the controller of all of these deities, Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva. And then she also says he delights in his own glories. So these are some of the first reasons that Rukmini gives that Krishna is actually superior to all others. So I was thinking that this is a really important point because it's really the central tenet of our Vaishnava devotee understanding, isn't it? I mean, if you said, what is it that we believe? What do the devotees believe or the Vaishnavas believe? That Krishna is God, right? Krishna is that Supreme Personality of God. It seems very simple, but that's so basic of an understanding, but it's not exactly an understanding that's shared by the vast majority of the population. You know, so in other words, not everybody understands this point. And even within India or within Hinduism or places where Krishna is more known, still his position is not always known. In fact, sometimes it's very obscured. And there's confusion between the other deities, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Are they all the same? Can you worship all the gods? Is Krishna just another one of the demigods? So there's so much confusion in who Krishna is and what his supreme position is. So the devotees know and understand that Krishna is Bhagavan. And this is an interesting word because I was looking at Prabhupada often defines for Bhagavan. I went in a search and I did the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That had about 20,000 hits, you know, in the database. So that wasn't real. But what I realized is that Prabhupada used this term repeatedly. And he often defined the Sanskrit word Bhagavan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is a very wonderful descriptive phrase when you think about it. He's supreme, he's a person, and the Godhead. He is the supreme. And I believe that someone may know this, but I believe Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj also used this term. I was looking through the Brahma Samhita and checking there, and I saw that Bhaktisiddhanta certainly used the word Supreme Godhead, and he used Supreme Personality. I'm not sure if he put it together, Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the same way that Prabhupada did, but he used very, very similar words, and I think that was probably some of the inspiration of Srila Prabhupada, you know, because I don't think you would normally see this definition, would you? I mean, if you were just reading books of Sanskrit or books on Vaishnava literature, this definition of Supreme Personality of Godhead, which I just think is such a wonderful, beautiful, and fully descriptive understanding. It says so much more than just God, doesn't it? And, you know, it's full. I mean, what does God mean when you think about it? It's very hard to define, and everybody defines it differently. I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the concept of God, of a supreme being. You know, but who is that supreme being? What is that supreme being? That everybody defines differently or thinks of differently as different conceptions. So by the grace of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Srila Prabhupada, we have a very clear understanding of God, very clear understanding of who Krishna is and Krishna's position. This position is made very clear. One of our authorities, Lord Brahma, who is the head of our sampradaya, of the Brahma Sampradaya, very first verse of his prayers, the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Panama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakaran Karanam. This is a wonderful, succinct verse, isn't it? That really describes the qualities of Krishna. Everything is there practically. You say, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller, right? Satchitananda Vigraha. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body, right? He's full of eternity. He's full of knowledge. He's full of bliss and vigraha. He has form. It's not some abstract, ethereal, impersonal energy. It's the form, the person who possesses these qualities. Anadir Adir Govinda, Anadir Adir, he's the origin of all. So here again, there are so many living entities, there are some in this material world, there are so many in the spiritual world, there are so many incarnations, there are so many expansions, there are so many partial plenary expansions, goes on and on and on, the multiple variety in both the material and the spiritual worlds, but Anadir Adir Govinda. Govinda, Krishna, is the origin of all, and Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the prime cause of all causes. So sometimes say, well, okay, God, this one created this, or God created, you know, people like the word juggle. Then who created God? You know, it's kind of like, all right, God created everything, who created God? You know, people think that's clever. It's not really that clever when you think about it, because that's the definition of God. God is the one who is the cause of all causes and has no other cause but himself. And that's the position of Krishna. Sometimes we say Krishna is causeless. In other words, Krishna exists primordially. He exists eternally. He is there. He's not there from the beginning of creation. The creation is emanating from him. And, you know, when I really think deeply about this, I get quite confused. Because we're really, you know, when we talk about things that are eternal and of the infinite, it's really beyond our abilities of the mind intelligence, isn't it? The deepest spiritual concepts cannot be fully held within the grasp of our limited material mind and intelligence. We really can't. It's, I mean, you can't, like, you know, to think of the Creator, the God who created everything, and nobody created him, and he was existing eternally, and you were existing eternally, and how did that all happen? And like that, you really can't, it's very, very difficult to grasp. Fortunately, we get some glimmer, some understanding, some realization by our spiritual intelligence. When the intelligence becomes spiritualized, becomes purified, we have some little ability at least to start to grasp these concepts. And it starts to become clear, or at least it starts to feel right. You start getting some sense of it, right? I mean, I think we all experience this. You know, we may not totally 100% able to realize and understand this very, very deep spiritual knowledge, you know, but it's not that it's completely obscure, completely unintelligible, that we can't understand it. We do begin to understand it. And that is because the intelligence is becoming purified through the process of bhakti yoga, of hearing and chanting, the 9 processes of devotional service. We just heard about, was that this morning? I don't know, we were reading sometime this morning by the 9 processes of devotional service. And it's through this process of purification that the intelligence has some ability to grasp the greatness of Krishna, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and our own relationship with him. And of course, we could also say, and we must say, that it's also due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, the Guru. Because without the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, there's no way we could have understood these things. There's no way we could understand who is Krishna, that this Krishna is God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, but when Krishna sends his pure devotees to elucidate this philosophy, to explain it, and explain it in a way that we could understand, then it started to become a little bit clearer. So we understand this very, very special. Special barely describes it, but it's a very unique position of Krishna. And we understand that Krishna, as we're saying, is the source of everything, that he is the source of all these other expansions. He's not only the source of the 3 primal deities, Tridisha, but he's the source of all incarnations, all avatars, all plenary expansions, every possible spiritual entity that we could possibly conceive of is coming from Krishna. And that's why the Paribhasa Sutra, the primal verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of which all other verses flow from and elucidate, is Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and the source of all others. This verse, of course, is given after all the different incarnations are listed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the end of that listing, it's stated, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Understand that he is the original Bhagavan, is the source of all these other incarnations. So we understand, at least somewhat, we can begin to understand through hearing the Vedic literature of the position of Krishna, about his position of the origin, the position of the cause of all causes. We also can understand a little bit about Krishna's special position just by his qualities. His qualities alone are unique and special. We read in the Nectar Devotion and other literatures that Krishna possesses 64 qualities in full. And there's a whole list of all these wonderful qualities that Krishna has. It's described that the living entities can have some of these qualities, at least partially, up to 50. And Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma possess another 5. Lord Narayan, Vishnu, possesses another 5, which brings us up to 60. And then there are 4 qualities out of the 64 that are unique to Krishna. This was Tuesday, and we had the students here. I would see if they knew what the 4 special qualities of Krishna are, but I'm sure all of you great scholars here know them. Name some of them. What are the 4 qualities that are unique to Krishna? His leelas, yes. He has very, very wonderful leelas, and particularly there's one kind that's mentioned specifically. Childhood. Someone say childhood? His childhood pastimes are very, very unique. What else? His beauty. He has wonderful excellence. I've written this down. He has a wonderful excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation, is how it's stated. His beauty. He is an expert flute player, absolutely. and he attracts all living entities by his flute playing. So that's three. And what others? One more. He's surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead, says in the Nectar Devotion. So he has the most wonderful devotees. He has the most wonderful pastimes, including childhood pastimes. He plays the flute that attracts all living entities in the universe, and he has a wonderful excellence of beauty. As Krishna, the very name, means all attractive. So Krishna has the supreme beauty and attractiveness. So these are all other reasons, you know, additional evidence that we see of why Krishna is supreme. These loving relationships with devotees are very special, too. We mentioned his childhood pastimes are mentioned, but even the different degrees of rasas and the intricacies and variety relationships are very unique within Krishna. Even in the worship of Narayan and other incarnations, usually those rasas are dasya, even perhaps shanta rasa. But we rarely see even the friendship, sankha rasa, or vatsala, the parental rasa, in other incarnations. And certainly we don't see the full exhibition of Madhurya rasa, like the relationship with the gopis and the queens, like Rukmini here in Dwarka. These are very unique to Krishna. Krishna displays the full realm, the full, gamut of relationships. And every possible relationship that we could think of, that we might see a perverted reflection of in this material world, is there in its supreme, in its purity, you know, in its perfection in the spiritual world, and also, of course, when Krishna appears in Vrindavan, when he descends upon this world. So we have these very, very wonderful features of Krishna, very wonderful relationships, very wonderful qualities, as well as his unique spiritual position. So I think it's kind of interesting that the devotees of Krishna worship Krishna and understand his position. It's almost on two different levels. You know, one is sort of the intellectual level of what is Krishna's position, that he's God and that he's supreme. But then there's also that position, which is, I guess, more of the heart, which is that Krishna is so attractive. Krishna is most beautiful, most attractive. He has wonderful relationships. You know, and we just feel so in, you know, the love that Krishna has for every living entity. And as we advance in Krishna consciousness and we go a little bit into our own relationship with Krishna, which is one of love, that is something that's, you know, the devotees just relish and appreciate so much. You know, so many, and it really goes beyond just understanding, oh, Krishna's God, I have to worship him, he's God, you know, like he's in control. Got the position. It's not that. It's based upon love. It's based upon bhakti. Love, devotion, and service, which is very, very special. And the devotees of Krishna have that relationship with Krishna because Krishna is in that very special position. So I wanted to read something from Srila Prabhupada, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 118.8. I got the number right. Anyway, it's from the from the teachings of Queen Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada gives additional evidence, you could say, or reasons why we understand Krishna. And then he talks about why people don't accept Krishna. He says, this is written in the first canto. He says, as we shall find in the 10th canto of this great literature, Lord Sri Krishna exhibited his humanly impossible activities even from the days of lying on the lap of his mother. He killed the Putana witch, and similarly he lifted the Govardhan hill, just as a boy picks up a frog's umbrella, and stood several days continuously just to give protection to the residents of Vrindavan. These are some of the superhuman activities of the Lord described in the authoritative Vedic literatures like the Puranas, Itihasas, histories, and the Upanishads. He has delivered wonderful instructions in the shape of the Bhagavad Gita. He has shown marvelous capacities as a hero, as a householder, as a teacher, and as a renouncer. He is accepted as the supreme personality of Godhead by such authoritative personalities as Vyas, Devala, Asita, mentioned, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Narada, Madhva, Shankara, Ramanuja, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's mentioning the leaders of the main Vaishnava Sampradayas, and also Shankaracharya, the leader of the Maya impersonal Sampradaya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and all other authorities of the line. He himself has declared as much in many places of the authentic literatures. So these are all the reasons, I'm probably just kind of giving it in a nutshell, that we accept Krishna on the basis of authority. All these great authorities throughout in the Vedic literature, throughout our history, incredibly advanced spiritual leaders, pure devotees, all have understood and accepted the position of Krishna. So this gives us a pretty good reason, if no other reason, that we see that people who are of very, very superior quality. And of course, we saw that in Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, we could see, was a perfect personality. He was completely renounced. He had no material desires whatsoever. And from that position of complete purity and self-realization, he boldly declared that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who are we to refute such authorities? Then Prabhupada goes on and says, and yet there's a class of men with demoniac mentality who are always reluctant to accept the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. This is partially due to their poor fund of knowledge and partially due to their stubborn obstinacy, which results from various misdeeds in the past and present. Such persons could not recognize Lord Sri Krishna even when he was present before them. And of course, we've discussed before that even when Krishna was here on earth, Prabhupada says only a handful of people, maybe 50 people, actually understood who Krishna was, even when he was personally present. What to speak of 5,000 years later, the difficulty in people understanding who Krishna is. So why do not people accept Krishna despite all of this ample Vedic evidence? This resistance to recognizing Krishna, Prabhupada said, is due to two things. He says, poor fund of knowledge and stubborn obstinacy due to people's past misdeeds or current misdeeds. So what does that mean? Poor fund of knowledge? They just don't understand. You know, they don't have this knowledge, just like we never had this knowledge until Srila Prabhupada came and gave it to us. We didn't understand who Krishna was. And some people, even after having this knowledge, still refuse to accept Krishna. This is the obstinacy. And Prabhupada says this is due to basically their bad karma, their past misdeeds. In other words, because of sinful activities, sometimes people are not able to accept Krishna, even if all the evidence is presented to them. So the devotees of Krishna accept Krishna, and we also want to glorify Krishna. We want others to know about Krishna. We want Krishna to be recognized and appreciated and loved and you know, by everyone. That's the position of the devotee. We want Krishna to be recognized, and we want people to have that relationship with him. Because we want to glorify Krishna, and also because we know that is the ultimate spiritual benefit of every living entity, if they can also rejoin that relationship, if they can once again understand their relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, what do the devotees do? Coming into this material world, we see the great acharyas in our line come to this material world and see that there are these two problems. The poor fund of knowledge, that people do not understand Krishna, and that people will not accept Krishna due to their past misdeeds. Obviously, the position of the Vaishnavas is to give spiritual knowledge. This is what the great acharyas come for. This is why Krishna descends himself. This is why he gives the Vedic literatures, why he recites the Bhagavad Gita. So that this knowledge will be available to the suffering conditioned souls in this material world. And that is our job. As devotees and as disciples of Srila Prabhupada and grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, to carry on the same mission. Prabhupada's mission was to take the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to every town and village, to bring the chanting of the holy name, to bring this knowledge of Krishna, to bring Krishna Bhakti, devotion to Krishna to everyone. So we need to all take this up to some degree, to whatever degree that we can, to whatever degree possible, to also help to give this knowledge of who Krishna is. For not only for the benefit of the conditioned souls, but also for our benefit in pleasing the Supreme Lord. Then the other problem, besides knowledge, was this stubborn obstinacy. What do we do about the fact that people, due to their past karmic activities, due to sinful activity, it's very difficult to have enough pious credit, enough sukriti, to be able to have some faith, because we understand that in the beginning there must be some faith to be able to engage in the process of Krishna consciousness. So it's explained that one has to have sufficient pious activity or sukriti to be able to have this faith to take up Krishna consciousness. So we have to engage people in purifying activities. And of course, Prabhupada, well, not Prabhupada, this is often called agata sukriti. Even if it is unknown by the person, this agyata sukriti means unknown pious activity that people engage in that accumulates to the degree that some faith can develop in their heart. Now, how do they get this agyata sukriti? Through receiving Srila Prabhupada's books, by hearing the holy name, by taking prasadam, by seeing the card of Lord Jagannath in a festival, in all of these ways. Prabhupada gave us all of these these preaching activities, these outreach activities are there, you know, for the purpose of purifying the hearts of the conditioned souls. Because when people become a little bit purified, the heart changes, and then the intelligence, you know, turns to the point where they can understand Krishna a little bit. And faith can develop. A little bit of faith can develop so they can take up this process of hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord. So that's our process, basically. We try to purify the hearts of the living entities, you know, through these purifying activities that we're able to give people, prasadam, the holy name, you know, just, Prabhupada said, even just seeing or touching or holding these books gives benefit. Prabhupada said having books in one's home gives one eternal benefit. We can't even estimate the benefit that is there in anything in contact with Krishna. Krishna's spiritual energy is so powerful that any contact that people have with it purifies the heart. And then they will begin to understand. Then they will be able to start hearing spiritual knowledge, and that poor fund of knowledge can be overcome, and they can understand the position of Krishna and hopefully take up the practice of devotional service. Okay, I think I'll stop at that point. Questions, comments? Hi, Brian.
Just thinking about this term, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When I first heard it, it didn't make sense to me. And over the years, I guess I forgot about the fact that it didn't make so much sense. So now you reminded me again.
Hearts become purified and you understand.
So this Godhead, that word, so Supreme Personality, it seemed is sufficient. It's a person and he's supreme. What does Godhead, what does that word, the word mean? And why is it there? Isn't it redundant?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I didn't actually research that or study that so much, why Prabhupada came with Godhead. It's even on the masthead of the, you know, we call it the Back to Godhead magazine. I think Prabhupada wanted to distinguish from just the concept of God, because God is very generic, you know, and it's not really clear what people mean when they say God. It's something supreme, something higher, you know, but Godhead indicates the source, doesn't it? You know, we say, like, you know, that's what I think of the word God. I mean, the source of everything. You know, like, you know, the head of the, don't they use that term? The head of this stream or something. Anyway, I'm trying to see. Fountainhead, yeah. I mean, the term, it's used in the English language like this, right, as meaning the source, right? So, in other words, the ultimate, the source. So in other words, not just like another god, like a demigod or something, but the source, the fountainhead, you could say, like of everything, you know, the Sarvakara and the Karanam. And I think that's why Prabhupada used the word Godhead. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also used the word Godhead like that. You know, you could say if Supreme may already cover that, but I think it's a little more descriptive, you know, because I think Prabhupada wanted to make it really clear that Krishna is that original source, that original origin. Oh, yeah. Yes.
One thought came in my mind, you know, you have the word Ishvara, which is God, you know, Bhagavan. Sometimes that word is used in for different gods, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then we have the word Parameshvara. Yeah. And so just the thought came in my mind, Ishvara, Parameshvara, God, Godhead. And then Supreme Personality means he's a person. Mm-hmm. So Supreme Personality.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because these are probably not literal translations from the Sanskrit, are they? You know, in other words, Prabhupada translates them in a way that gives the full meaning, but probably not absolutely literally. Right? So, yes, Jen Musto.
You referenced the stubborn obstinacy, and it seems that, of course, this is all related with faith, and to some extent, we're also challenged, you know, as practicing devotees, you know, as our faith increases, then, you know, we have more capacity to understand our relationship with Krishna. So, my question is, what thoughts or what? How can you enlighten us so that we can increase our faith, or what strategies can we use to do that so that we overcome this residual stubborn obstinacy that seems to be, you know, part of being a conditioned soul?
Yeah. Well, it's a very good question, and it's a very deep question. How do we increase faith? I think it's Vishnu-Chakravarti Thakur, or others may have discussed it also, maybe Prabhupada too, that in one sense, all of the processes of devotional service, you know, beginning with Shraddha, you know, then Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, are all degrees of development of faith. And that each step in that process of bhakti yoga is an increase in faith and a development of faith. So conversely, each one of those stages increases faith. So in other words, Sadhu Sangha, the association of devotees, increases faith, right? When we're with like-minded people, our faith increases. If we're out with non-devotees all the time and we're always hearing, you know, material explanations of the world, you know, it will actually start to erode our faith a little bit, unless we're very, very strong and we're, you know, really strong in our other spiritual activities. So Sadhu Sangha increases our faith. The Bhajana Kriya, obviously the hearing and chanting increases our faith. As we read Srila Prabhupada's books and we read these purports and we read these verses, our faith increases, doesn't it? Because we're hearing more and more information about Krishna, the spiritual world, and spiritual life. As we're chanting Hare Krishna, our faith is increasing because we're becoming more purified. And as the heart becomes more and more purified, again, talking about that stubborn obstinacy, which is due to those past misdeeds and current misdeeds, Prabhupada said. In other words, that's the process of purification needs to go about that will tend to erode that obstinacy and lack of faith. So again, we kind of come down to, you know, basic processes, I think, of devotional service, of bhakti yoga, of hearing and chanting, association of devotees. Those things all help us to develop faith. I think one other thing, and of course this would be part of kirtanam, but a version of it, is when we tell others about Krishna consciousness. You know, when we're preaching, we are also preaching to ourselves. I think that every time I give a class, You know, it's like, you know, you're unfortunate that you have to hear it, but I'm fortunate that at least I am hearing some philosophy myself, you know, and I find it increases my faith and my determination by, you know, having to speak this philosophy. I think, oh yeah, right, yeah, that's it. I remember that. You know, so it's like, and what to speak of when we go out to the non-devotees, and we have to convince people. Because I was thinking this, you know, why is Krishna God? We don't usually speak of why is Krishna God in the Bhagavatam class because we assume we all sort of understand that or we've all accepted it. You know, but if you go out and you talk to anybody, you're gonna have to explain to people why is Krishna God? Who's Krishna? What's this Hare Krishna? You know, that's like practically one of the first questions you have to explain to people. How Krishna's God, and therefore you have to have some faith. And as you do that, even if you're not very good at it, or even if you're kind of stumbling for your words, or you're not quite sure, or where the person's argumentative, you'll find that you become stronger and your faith increases. And Lord Chaitanya gives you that strength and that ability. You know, sometimes we see Lord Chaitanya gives us the words practically to be able to speak, even if we don't have them. Get Ragatmakam and Pushkar.
In Tamal Krishna Goswami's book entitled, if I'm not mistaken, Bhakti, the Living Theology, he states that Prabhupada coined that term devotional service, the translation of bhakti, as a mahavakya. A mahavakya is something that capsulizes the essence of volumes of information behind it. So also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he says, is a mahavakya.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sure there's a deep philosophical understanding of why Srila Prabhupada used these words, which I haven't read that or been so familiar with that. That would be good to study. Yeah. Pushkar Prabhu, did you have a comment? Behind you.
Oh, I mean, the word shraddha, it has lots of meanings besides faith. I mean, faith is kind of like a start-off thing, you know, start-off with. But if you look at all the shraddha, sabde, vishvas, kore, sudhidha, nishchoy, krishna bhakti, kore, bhakti, savakama, kutta hoy. For instance, that verse probably quotes it in the intro to the Gita, which means implicit faith in something sublime, first of all. But I'm thinking in the first canon, we have Shushu Sho Shraddhidana Shivasa Devikataru Chahi Shanmahatseva Avipra. That verse describes that someone who's enthusiastic, eager, it doesn't even say faith, it says eagerness. And then when you get up to the third canon,
Shraddha is
eagerness.
It's called eagerness, huh?
Doesn't even say faith. And then, so Shraddhidana Shivivardhamana Virakta Manyata Karoti Pungsa. This is a verse in 5 or 6, third canon. And then it'll say those persons who have, again, full shraddha, it's increasing, vivardhamana, this enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And then you line that up with Rupa Goswami saying, utsaham nischadaryat. These are, in other words, qualifications. So the faith won't increase unless you see the results also, that you're enthusiastic and virakti, developing a virakti detachment and certain things coming from that. It's the first thing, utsahan. If you take enthusiasm as the definition, eagerness, then it seems like there's another whole perspective than just faith. Sounds kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Blind faith. Yeah. First of all, thank you, because it's good to point out there's so many, I mean, the Vedic literature is so wonderful that there's so rich definitions and different ways and perspective of defining even one word.
Well, I don't know about Vedic literature, but Bhagavatam, Prabhupada.
Bhagavatam
so
specifically,
I'm not that familiar with the Vedas.
But I think that is a point that we tend to have connotations of certain words which are used a lot in our Judeo-Christian, you know, world, like faith, and so I think that we often think of the word in a limited sense, and as you're pointing out, it's really much richer when we see how the Bhagavatam uses it.
There's lots of other meanings besides just blind faith.
Well, Prabhupada didn't think too much of blind faith. He didn't like blind faith.
But I mean, that's the connotation
that we have, yeah. Good point. Madam Mahan, and I think you're going to close it out here.
In the same way, Prabhupada, in that verse you're quoting, Ado Shraddha Sadasanga, he defines Shraddha as a preliminary desire for self-realization.
Preliminary desire, that's good.
So a desire, and then other places he describes Shraddha as respect. Hmm. And then another place as appreciation. So it says if they see you chanting on the street and they say, oh, those are nice people, he says that's Shraddha.
Yeah.
And also Prabhupada did mention about chanting on the street. He says it forces them to become pious. Yeah. So you mentioned it, hearing, but when they drive by or walk by or they see it, they're all increasing their pious activities, which Ado Shraddha Sadasanga, then the next stage is that, oh, what are you doing? You know, could you have any literature on this?
Die. I'll go to the Prabhupada. Anyway.